Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Thank you so much to everybody who's been going onto iTunes and leaving comments for me and rating my podcast. It's fantastic to see. I'm giving out random books to people who are leaving their comments and bits and pieces, so expect something in the mail. And remember, if you are enjoying my podcast, recommend them to your mates and family, because there's nothing worse than being the only one out there doing real estate. It's great to have mates in the market and to be out there and creating futures for yourselves, with your mates as well. So make sure you're doing that. Now today, what are we going to talk about? Well, I'm actually going to talk about a topic that I think is very important, regardless of how old you are. But today I'm actually going to introduce you to a guest of mine who is very young. She's just starting out. Her name is Renee, and she's going to ask me a few questions about how to get started. So welcome, Renee.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Now, how old are you, Dom?
I'm 23 years old.
23 years old. And you and your boyfriend moved out together and you're setting up house and all of that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay. So you're wanting to get into the property market. What sort of questions would you have for me, do you think? Where do you think you should start?
I think my main question is, where do we start? There's so many options that we could take. And I guess it's a bit confusing, a bit overwhelming for someone my age.
Okay. So for a young person first starting out, going into the property, one thing I hear from a lot of parents particularly is the fact that, oh, it's so expensive, you know, to get into the property market. You know, how are my kids ever going to be able to afford a house? Well, where do you live?
In Melbourne.
In Melbourne. All right. Well, prices are, you know, they're up there a little bit in Melbourne. And obviously Sydney's worse. But that doesn't mean that you can't actually enter the property market. And I think one of the first things that everybody needs to realize is that, you know, you don't move into a house that is the same as the one that you've lived in with your parents.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because, you know, they spent 40 years achieving that house and that standard of living and everything else. So you've got to be prepared to start at the bottom.
Okay.
Now, that means, you know, you might be living in something that might be old and crappy that you might have to do up. Is that something you'd be prepared to do?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? So, you know, a renovator might be a good place to start, for example. You know, a unit as opposed to a house. You may not be able to afford a house, so you might be looking at a small unit. You might be cramped into a one-bedroom unit to start with, whereas you really want a two or a three, but, you know, you might have to start with a one-bedder just to get in. But I think one of the most important things is to look at a manufactured growth deal. Now, let me explain that for those out there who are listening who are not students of mine. Manufactured growth is where you do something to the property to improve the value of the property. So you're creating growth. You're creating wealth in the property, because particularly for your first investment, or, you know, for those who are a little bit older than Renee is, you know, you need to be building wealth. You know, you might have had kids and whatever, and you might have a house, but not much equity in it and those sort of things. So you need to build wealth. Even before you start thinking about income replacement and all of these other things that I talk about, I think the first thing that everybody needs to do is build equity, build wealth, because with that, then you can use that to create passive income. So, you know, you starting out, you wouldn't necessarily be able to go into some of the more advanced strategies like, you know, construction of blocks of units or subdivisions or those types of things, because they're probably too expensive. So one of the first things that you'll probably need to do is start with something like a small renovator. Now, obviously, even in places like Sydney and Melbourne, you know, the starting point can be reasonably up there. You'll have to be prepared to travel, so perhaps not quite in the city. You know, you might need to be further out and be prepared to travel into work and things like that just to get ahead, just to get that start. The other thing to consider is, you know, you need to buy something that you can increase the value of. One of the things that I always talk about for young people just starting out is to go and find an old unit, particularly in the cities, an old unit where it's got a big sinking fund. Now, a sinking fund is typically all the money that all the owners over the years have put into the property, and it accumulates in the body corporate bank account. to use on all of the common areas of the block of units. So that might be the gardens, the outside of the building, the stairwells, all of that sort of stuff. So if you got onto, a small unit, old and crappy, preferably, in a block of units that's small, don't go into one that's like 300 units in one block. Go into one that's maybe 6 or 8 or something like that. Get yourself, if you can squeeze in. Now, obviously, you've got to save a deposit to get in there. And you won't be able to borrow unless you've got probably full-time jobs. But that's a good starting point. But with a full-time job and saving up, you know, you can still get 95% loans these days on your first home as principal place of residence. Or 10% obviously is going to be a lot easier for you. And these days, most of the states have discounted stamp duty for first homeowners. And in most states, you've got the first homeowners grant as well. So all of those things combined will assist with getting you into something, anything. So with this block of units, you get on the body corporate. Now, once you're on the body corporate, because as soon as you're an owner, you're allowed to be on the body corporate, you go to the meetings. And what you should do is do a little costing out of how much is in the sinking fund and what it could be used for. So you might do a cost of, say, well, we could spend this much on carpets in all of the common areas. We could render the outside. We could clean up the gardens, all that sort of thing. Big surface areas make you the most money. So rendering and painting is massive. It adds huge value to the value of the property. And the thing is, it's not money that's coming out of your bank account. It's coming out of the sinking fund's bank account. So you could actually increase the value of your property using the sinking fund money, not even any of your own money.
Wow.
I'll tell you a story about one of my students who was actually 19. She was in Sydney and she did exactly this. And there was a block of 6 units and there was one old biddy that lived at the end. Her name was, for want of a better word, Mrs. Smith. There was her unit and then there was 4 units that were all owned by investors. And what she did was she got on the body corporate and she did this costing of the sinking fund money and what it could be used for. And she proposed to the body corporate that she could project manage it. She'd got quotes on everything and all that sort of thing. Now, before going to the body corporate meeting, she got she sent a letter to the other owners, not Mrs. Smith, but the other owners being the investors, and said, look, there's this much money in the sinking fund. If we use it on this, this, and this, I've had some quotes and costs and whatever, and I've had real estate agents come by and say, if we spent that money, our units would go up by X dollars. So if you can come to the next body corporate meeting and support me, that would be fantastic. But if you can't, would you mind signing this proxy that I can vote on your behalf? So that's what happened. She went in there and all the investors said, you go, girl. You know, here's my proxy. They didn't go, but they sent her a proxy. And she obviously voted. She had the winning vote. Dear old Mrs. Smith, she declined. But anyway, she was outvoted. And she spent the sinking fund monies. And, you know, that unit in Sydney went up by over $100,000 simply by using the sinking fund money.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. Now, obviously, saving the deposit is one thing. Another way you can actually start without actually going and doing your own home might be to go and do a joint venture, like with parents.
Yes.
So I understand that might be something that you would be looking at.
Yes, that is something I'm interested in.
Still got to convince the parents.
Yeah.
Well, once you've got, you know, the parents behind you, obviously you can start to look at more advanced deals. So, for instance, just imagine that you got something that you could maybe subdivide and renovate and sell the old house, which means, you know, if you do your figures right with the right kind of feasibility, you should be able to have the block of land for free.
Okay.
Now, with that, you should be able to build something on it and make a profit. Well, you build a house. If you're going to build a house, it might be a good idea to build something that's like a dual occupancy. So if you were doing this for yourself, as an example, you could buy the house, you could live in the house while you renovated it. At that stage, you could revalue the property.
Okay.
Because it would increase in value simply by having the renovation done. Then with the increased equity in that property, you could use that equity to do a subdivision. Okay? We've broken it in half, we'll say. Yep. As soon as the subdivision's through, that immediately increases the value of the property again. So then you go back to the bank and say, okay, I want to release the security of the new block of land that you've produced, which means you can take that security to another bank and use that for borrowing to build a house. While you're living in this one, let's sell it.
Okay.
Sell the old one. We'll make some money on that. now we've got a block of land that we can take to a bank and say, all right, we want to if you could build a duplex, or if it was doing as a PPR, you can't build a duplex, you might only be able to build a house. Build a type of house where you and your boyfriend can live in one section of the house, so it's pretty self-contained, you know, a bit of a sitting area and an ensuite and things like that. And the other house, the rest of the house, can then be rented out even in pieces, whether it be to one couple or you know, to a family, or even to a number of people living there where they've all got their own little separate living areas and things like that, or even just renting them room by room. What you'll find is, and I've done this many times before, is that by building something like that, you're actually able to live in your little bit. You get rent from the other guys that are renting out the rest of your house, and you might even be able to live there and not have to pay a mortgage.
Awesome.
That's what we call mortgage-free housing. So that might be something that you can look at as well.
Okay.
Now, that's probably not your first deal because you won't have the money to get into a deal like that.
Yeah.
But it might be something you could do with a joint venture with your parents.
Okay.
So that's the type of thing you might be able to do.
Cool.
And, of course, the very first thing you need to do is get yourself educated, because unless you know how to do a renovation, how to do a subdivision, how to do strata titling, and how to do developments and all of these little tricks of the trade, how to structure, do the taxes, all GST, all of these other things, they are very, very important. So the first thing you have to do is come to my courses. Okay. What other questions have you got for me?
So something I'm kind of wondering is, do I buy a place for myself as a, like, my PPR, do I do that, or do I do an investment first?
That's a really good question, and it's actually something I've done a whole podcast on. So if you go back through my podcast, you'll actually be able to find one. Do you do a PPR or do you do an investment first? And there's no strong answer. Basically, you starting out as an individual, is it easier to buy a PPR? Maybe, but then obviously if you buy an investment property, you get the interest on the thing is going to be tax deductible, as well as the income that'll come from that property will be counted as your income. So if you are low in serviceability, so if you had a lower paying job, it might be better to buy an investment property first, because the income from that property then counts towards servicing the loan.
Okay.
If you've got a stronger job, because you've got to live somewhere anyway, it might be better to do a PPR deal first. If you're still living at home, it might be better to do an investment property first.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of backwards and forwards as to which one you do first. But above everything, what you should do is make sure that you've got that you're doing a manufactured growth deal, so that you're always looking at increasing the value of whatever you've got more than the market. Because if it's just going up with what the market's doing, you're not really getting ahead.
Okay.
All you're doing is being just another one of the sheep.
Okay.
What else have you got for me?
I just have a question about trusts.
Right.
I think I hear a lot of information and different information about trusts.
Mm.
What's a basic rule there?
Okay, well, I am very pro investing through trusts and you know, protected structures from an asset protection perspective. But if you're buying your first home, it's not going to be in a trust. It's going to be in your own name. That's how you'll get the first homeowner's grant. That's how you'll get the lower stamp duty and all of those things to kick it off. If you're buying your first investment property, then no, it needs to be in a trust structure. And if it's in a trust structure, then, you know, you still qualify in most cases for the first homeowner's grant and everything else when you do get to buy one in your own name.
Okay.
Okay?
Cool. Yeah.
So we've talked about what kind of deal. Yeah. What other questions have you got there?
I think something that I know I'm a little concerned about, and so are my friends and like other people my age, is once I have got that first deal, how do I kind of keep that flow going then, like keep going on to the next deal and the next deal?
Mm. Okay, well, the first thing is that's a multifaceted question.
Yeah.
The first thing is your focus and your momentum from a goal-setting perspective and a motivational perspective and all of those things. And that's really about staying connected. You know, stay part of the I Love Real Estate community. Listen to all the podcasts. Listen to all of the free stuff that I put up there. Come to the courses. Go to seminars. Interact with kids your own age that are out there doing it and are proactive and motivated. Set up some mates in the market where you get together on a regular basis have little coffee get-togethers and talk about where are you up to and what goals did you set and did you make that goal and if not, why not? And you know, hold yourself accountable basically to someone to keep that momentum going.
Okay.
That's the first thing from a focus perspective. And keep reading, keep learning, because when you're in that growth phase, that's what keeps your focus going. And there's a whole lot of anabolic things that happen in your body when you're actually excited and focused with something that you know, you end up attracting the right kind of deals and all of those sort of things. The second thing is the momentum. Now, I find it's actually interesting, and something that inspired me long, long time ago was to actually do some calculations. So you're 23, you said.
Yeah.
All right. What I'd like you to do, and this is what I'd like everybody to do who's under 30, or if you're under 30, you've got to do it till you're 40, and if you're under 40, you've got to do it till you're 50, et cetera. But imagine, just imagine, we're going to go on a little daydream here. Just imagine you bought a property every year till you're 30.
Wow.
Okay, so you're 7 years off. So it's every year until you're 30. What financial position would you be in by the time you got to 30? So what you have to do there, and this is really cool, this is really part of an interactive vision board almost. So you go, all right, well, this year, what kind of deal could I do this year? And you go out and you go, okay, well, I can't do anything on my own, so I'm going to do a joint venture with my parents. I'm going to do a joint venture with my friend's parents. I'm going to find this fantastic deal and I'm going to do a joint venture on it. That might be your starting point as an example. So, and start small. If you're going to do a joint venture, don't do anything too big. Okay. You know, keep it small, keep it simple, make a bit of money and then move on from there. So you won't work out what that deal is. And, you know, by this stage you've done a bit of research and you might have found out what an old unit might cost in a, you know, the type of deal that I said before and how much money you might make. Track that through and say, okay, well, that'll take me a year to do that deal. At the end of it, you might be able to refinance. If it's positive cash flow, you can probably keep it. If it's not positive cash flow, you might have to sell the first one, okay?
Yeah.
Just to get enough money to move forward. But the idea is obviously to keep.
Yeah.
So the second deal, you might have enough money to do on your own. Now, if you've got enough money to do on your own, it might be a PPR deal or it might be another renovation, it might be a subdivision, it might be something like that, where you do a deal and try and keep the next one.
Okay.
Okay? Try and keep the next one. You know, get your friends to come over and rent rooms off you and all that sort of stuff, but try and keep the next one. And then do some manufactured growth deal, at least a renovation, if nothing else. And then by that stage, if you've increased the value of that one in a year's time, let's keep that one. Let's say it's neutral. It just looks after itself. Then the next year, you go and buy another one. Okay, what can we buy now? Well, the next one, you might be able to squeeze into a subdivision, the next one, and work those figures through. And then do that right through till you're age 30 and work out, you know, a percentage growth. So if you're buying in one of the bigger capital cities, you're probably going to be conservatively looking at a 5% growth. Okay. Might be more, might be less, but conservatively a 5% growth. So work out what that means over, say, the next 7 years for you, what that property would grow at, plus what you've initially made the property worth with your manufactured growth strategy. Work that forward. And even if you just calculate that the rent looks after itself, you look at how amazingly wealthy you're going to be by the time you're 30. Just doing that.
Yeah.
Is that exciting?
Yeah, very exciting.
Put that up on your vision board. Put that up on your computer screen. Put that on your, you know, the blind that you look at when you're in the kitchen or whatever else, and that'll keep you motivated.
Awesome.
What else have you got to ask me about?
So another thing is I kind of think that I'm seeing deals here and there, but then I get caught between do I buy something regional or in the city?
Mm. A lot of that comes down to cost. I mean, it's a lot cheaper in the regional areas. So when you're just starting out, you might start with a little place in the country that you can increase the value on. Let me tell you a story about two of my students who are doing very, very well now. They're now building, you know, 14 and 15 unit townhouses.
Oh, wow.
After 8 years. So that's like, you know, for you, you could start here and but 8 years later they were doing 14 townhouses, I think they were doing. So that would be when you're 31. Imagine that. They started, the only deal they could afford, and they were a young couple living in Sydney. They couldn't afford Sydney. So they went to a country area, middle of nowhere, and they bought a little place that cost them $88,000.
Wow.
It was run down, but it was sitting on a double block.
Nice.
So they went out. So it was about 6 hours drive out of Sydney. So every weekend, Friday afternoon, they drove out the 6 hours, worked on it all weekend, drove back into Sydney, worked for the week, drove back out. They did this for like 2 months. That's a lot of work. Would you be up for something like that? Would you be prepared to do that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, let me tell you the figures. So it cost them $88,000 and they obviously renovated it and they painted and they'd never painted before. So you can imagine what the paintwork was like. But they painted it. They put tiles down. They put lino down. They got carpet in. They learned how to renovate, basically. They did a bathroom, a kitchen and, you know, cosmetic. And they did the garden and all of that kind of stuff. They even put up a fence, I think. And they went to the council and said, well, we've got two blocks here, so can we split the title so that we can put another house on the other one? And the council said, sure, you know, it'll cost you a few hundred dollars, wasn't very much. And so they split the title. So they had now had two titles, not just one. They had a renovated property. Now, when they were out there renovating, the townsfolk that walked past said, oh, geez, you've done a good job. It looks so good. When can we rent it? When can we move in? So there was a lineup of people to rent it. So as soon as it was finished, they rented it out, and it was positive cash flow. I think from memory it made them somewhere around $3,000-$5,000 a year. Positive cash flow. Not a lot, but it was all right.
Yeah.
So then they've got this spare block of land to do something with. So they found an old house that was on a farmer's property in the town that was up for removal. So they got an old removal house and they actually borrowed the money off their parents to move the house onto the block, because you can't borrow money from a bank to move a house. And they made a deal with the farmer that they didn't have to pay for it until they had it connected onto their block with all of the services and everything else, because the farmer knew that, you know, they didn't have much money and they couldn't borrow against it until it was connected to services. So once it's there, I can't remember whether they actually borrowed at that stage or not, but you could. Once it's connected to services, you could. And then that would give you the money then to go and renovate the old house that they moved off the farm onto the new block. And it rented out and it's all positive. So, you know, both positive cash flow. And in their case, I think they ended up selling one of them because that gave them the money for a deposit to go back into Sydney and then buy a place, a block of land to go and build a house.
Wow, that's great.
So, you know, they made money. They learned, you know, they learned how to renovate. They learned how to do things. They got a lot of experience and confidence to be able to go back into Sydney, buy a tiny little piece of land that they built a lovely little house on that they still own in Sydney. And it's positive cash flow, and I think that property's made them like, you know, $400,000-$600,000 already.
Oh wow!
Yeah, more than that, because it was $450 when they made $450 out of the build process, and Sydney market's gone crazy since then, so it'll be worth a lot more today. So you know, that's the type of thing. I mean, the cities are obviously going to give you natural growth that the country won't. So anything in the regional areas, you've really got to make the money. You've got to make the deal make you money. You can't just sit back and wait for it to happen, because it probably won't.
Okay, yeah.
You're going to get a higher yield in a country area because it costs you less to buy and the rent is still good. So it'll be positive cash flow quite likely. But you have to make it make you money. So I'm quite comfortable with country areas, and if that's all, if you can afford, go into a country area, absolutely. But do a deal that you can make worth more, yeah, because that's the money you're going to need to do other things. And then, you know, even as you move forward, even if you live in the country and, you know, you can do country deals all day long, that's great. But I would still diversify, even if I was living in the country and I could do deals where I'm at, I would still diversify and try and get something in higher growth areas down the track.
Okay.
So a mixture is always good. But starting off, you need to do a country deal, do a country deal. You've got to be prepared to put in the effort to make it happen. I'll tell you another story. I had a lady living in Adelaide, and she was a young couple, both worked, and with a couple of small kids. And so she was complaining about, you know, that she couldn't buy a place in Adelaide where she wanted to live, where that was close to the school and close to the work and all of this kind of stuff. It was just too expensive and all this kind of thing. I said, well, buy somewhere else. Adelaide's not that big. You know, buy on the other side of town. Buy somewhere where you can afford. And she was like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. I'd have to travel, you know, an hour every day to work. I said, look, what if you did that for a year? Yeah. Would it really hurt you? Do it for a year, make your money, and then, you know, by that stage I did some figures on the actual properties at the time, and she would have had enough money out of the type of deal I was talking to her about to be able to sell that property, buy something in the area where she wanted to be. So short-term pain for longer-term gain, but she wasn't prepared to do it.
I am.
Good. I'm pleased to hear it. Okay, so any other questions for me, or you reckon you can get out there and make it happen?
Oh, I think I'm ready.
You think you're ready?
I'm keen, yeah.
All right. Well, guys, I hope that's helped. I dragged Renee in here kicking and screaming to ask me these questions. But I hope that helps, because there's a lot of people in Renee's scenario out there just trying to get into the property market. There's a lot of, you know, people who are trying to start on their first property investment deal. They might have a PPR, but they're starting on their first investment. So I hope the discussion today has been helpful to you. And, you know, or if you know of somebody who's in that situation, get them to come and listen to the podcast, because it's something that can certainly, you know, get your head in the right spot to make it happen. I'll tell you one more story before I go. There was a one of my dear friend, she's actually my my kids' adopted grandparents, for want of a better word. Her daughter was just starting out, and she didn't have a lot of money. They had a little bit of savings, and I talked to them about getting their first property, and they were a young couple with one child at that stage. They've now got two, and I said to her, look, just get in and do something. And in that case, they were actually looking at you know, building a property. So it was in one of the newer states, and I said, be really smart about what you build, and make money out of that build process. It doesn't matter if it's small. If you can build something where you can live in part of it and somebody else can live in the other part, they can help you pay the mortgage. And it doesn't matter if they're only small areas. Just make do until you've got enough money to be able to move on and do something else. And I'm very pleased to say they did that, and they are now moved on. They've sold that property. They bought another one with a nice big yard. They've now got two kids, and they've got, you know, they've got an investment with a good chunk of equity in it, and, you know, that was their way of actually getting started. So, Renee, I want you to step forward for now until you're 30 and work out that plan of what position you would be in when you are 30. So another 7 years, if you bought one property. That's not a big ask. One property a year for the next 7 years. What financial position would you be in by the time you're 30?
Really good one. Be very happy.
Well, then, you know, you might even have enough passive income by that stage to not be able to work and still have income coming in to have kids and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Well, that's some food for thought, guys. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Renee, for coming on and you know, sharing the podcast with me.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, guys, that's it for me this week. I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on another completely different topic, and make sure that you refer everything to your mates and your friends as well, because they can join in the game, they can join in the fun and the wealth creation process as well. Talk to you soon, guys. I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. Bye now.